No way.
Yeah.
No way.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. So they came back into your story again.
Yes. Villains always come back to your story.
Villains always come back. Oh yes. My goodness. Welcome to the Home Base Podcast, the podcast where we explore the keys to college success and personal growth. I'm your host, Dr. Ricky Pope, and today we're deep diving into how students can survive and thrive in their college journey. For this first series, we're collaborating with the Young Men of Color Alliance, an organization committed to supporting young men of color through mentorship and community initiatives. Today's episode will focus on giving you the tools and strategies to take control of your academic experience. We will discuss the importance of developing agency and the power to make choices, shape your future, and overcome obstacles. Welcome to the Home Base Podcast. Dr. Rolden guides students to overcome barriers, cultivate resilience, and lead confidently through personal insight, therapeutic principles, and real-world strategies. Also, she's SDSU's last homecoming queen and a Quest for the Best award recipient. Her commitment to community and leadership is profound. Beyond academia, Dr. Rolden's national speaking engagements at Comic-Con, WonderCon, LA Comic-Con, and TEDx highlight her passion for harnessing geek culture, video games, and diverse narratives to foster resilience, inclusion, and community. Her life's work is a testament to transformation, mentorship, and inspiring others to see themselves as heroes of their journeys. Welcome to the Home Base Podcast.
Thank you for having me. That was such a cool introduction. It makes me sound cooler than I am.
So what is your origin story?
Ugh, what a question. We all have an origin story. Well, mine start all the way back in Guatemala. I immigrated to United States back in 2001 in September, which is a historical month. Mm-hmm. We immigrate because in my country we have an internal war, or a civil war, as you call it, mm-hmm. for many, many years. We lost over 40,000, if not more, of my people. And my mom decided to move to United States in order to seek safety. Mm-hmm. We immigrate, part refugees, part just immigration, you know. We have our green cards and why not. But we know of many of our people that comes in what we call the beast, the train that comes from Guatemala to all the way here to United States. We come in that aeroplane, though, which it was as bad. So we came here to United States. I didn't speak any English when I came here.
Oh, my gosh. How old were you when you came?
I was like 21, 22, you know, they say when trauma happens, your mind gets a little blurry. So for me, those years are all together because, you know, I love my family, my brothers, and my dad passed away too during that time. So it was very hard to readapt to a new nation, new culture, new everything. Also because I never felt welcome when I came here. Mm. And I didn't speak English. The only thing I knew how to say was hamburger, which for 6 months, that's all I eat. And that's probably why I'm a vegetarian now.
Oh, my goodness. That's funny. Hamburger.
Yeah. That was the only thing I knew what to say. So I started getting jobs to learn how to say clothes, vegetables. So I grew up in a grocery store and Target, you know, just getting my vocabulary. I work as a nanny, housekeeper. And for everybody out there that is in the work service, be nice to them because you don't know who they are. Mm. Because we may be a superhero disguise. What do I mean with that? I have my the equivalent of a doctoral in education from Guatemala. But when I came here, since I didn't speak English and it's a different educational system, it didn't transfer. I also got my education in performing arts and music. So I belong to a beautiful program called a Philharmonic and an orchestra, the youth orchestra of El Sistema that was created in Venezuela. And I learned to do percussion. Since then, I started doing breaking stereotypes, breaking the rules, as I call it, as an origin story. I'm a rule breaker. Because I like to see one to be one. And there was, back in the day, there was not that many women that did percussion in classical training, so I wanted to be one. And then I moved here to the United States, and I started my English education because I did 4 years of English education in the community college. Shout out to City College and the ESL students. Whoop, whoop, my peeps. And then after 4 years of learning English, I finally started my 3 years of community college in humanities because I wanted to be a teacher. Because remember, I was a teacher back home. And in those years, I was diagnosed with severe dyslexia. Until then, I didn't know that because I can do math, I can read, I can do all these things. Granted, all the books and reading things that I like to do were history, but in a form of comics or fables. So that's when I started, that was my escape. And I, you know, because they have the little bubbles and stuff, I was able to read. And also I read a lot of manga, which is from left to right. So I never felt like I didn't know how to read until I came to the United States and they told me I couldn't. And in particular, I remember that when they told me that I was dyslexic, they told me that I need to be in a special education. So I was like, okay, you know best. Mm-hmm. Always questions authority because they know best, right? Mm-hmm. So they put me in the special education classes. They put me in a classroom with different levels of cognition, with different levels of abilities, because we all have a disability. But you have cognitive disabilities, you have learning disabilities, you have physical disabilities, all together clumping one. And the professors didn't even care for us in the sense of like, how can you teach, I don't know, algebra to somebody that cannot speak at that moment or somebody that it has a mental illness? It was just not appropriate. It's what I call it, segregation. They say it was integration and inclusion. No, it was segregation. They just lump everybody in the same classroom. So again, I advocate for myself, and I went and asked, it must be a way to get out of this. Not because I didn't like my classmates. I love them, and I still have friends with them. But it was like, we are not getting the education that we deserve. Because welcome to be a minority. That was first point of being my origin story. I never thought before coming to United States that I was a minority. I never felt less than. Because in my country, I'm the bunch, I'm half Mayan, half Spanish, meaning I'm mestiza, and I'm the bad guys and the good guys. So I have a little bit of villain on me too. And I said that because the difference between a hero and a villain origin story is mentorship and the trauma that you have gone through and how you get the tools to deal with that trauma. So why did I say that? So I went to I was taking my G classes in community college, and then I have two people that changed my life then. That is where my life changed. I have one professor that told me, basically, because I was working in, like Burger King back in the day, they told me, you can only finish your AA maybe, it was a maybe, big maybe, question mark, just to flip hamburgers or be a housekeeper. Mm. And this is a person that looked like me, and he was in power. Mm. And I was like, what? So I had my benching story there. I was like, oh my gosh, I just hate everything, hate here. Mind you, in that time, because I just barely started in United States, we have to start from scratch for nothing. So we didn't have not even a penny. Mm-hmm. We didn't have nothing in our name. So we were homeless for a while. Mm-hmm. I get any jobs that we could. We live from a lot of roommates to an apartment to a house. And now, I have my own condo and all that stuff. I say this because when you saw me, you will only see the housekeeper. You will only see the service person. But I was a hero. Now I know that. Talking about imposter syndrome, right? So when I was in the college and this person told me this, I was like so angry. This flame inside of me talking about the Punisher. If you read comic books, that was my Punisher moment. I was like, there must be a way. So I was melting down, crying outside in the patio of the college. And I remember this beautiful human came and told me, what's wrong? You know, like just like your fairy godmother. And I explained what had happened. And they were like, it was the director of the disabled students at City College. Mm-hmm. And they offered me actually a job as a mentor for kiddos that they were transferring to high school to college. And I was like, what? And then they helped me planning my classes. And they say, what do you want to do? And I'm like, I want to be a teacher, blah, blah, blah. And they say, because of that, they discovered I have a science brain. Yeah, because before that, I barely was making it, right? I in classes, I was like, I don't know science. What are you talking about? I like music. I like art. I like all the things that doesn't have to do with math, hardcore science and stuff. And one of my jobs was working in after school programs in the schools that they were in the minority neighborhoods, which I love because I learned so much. And then chapter two of your origin story, oh, if you play a video game, is you have get your second level. Your second level was my second mentor. You know, to be a hero, you need your psychic. You need your butler, if you will. You know how
Alfred.
Yeah, Alfred in Batman. Mine, it was the Bridge program. That was first the one of the communities, one of the rooms that I belonged to, that I was like, oh my goodness, I'm seeing more than me. I'm seeing people that has the same struggle, so similar to me from different parts of the world. You know, from Somalia, from France, from Austria, name it. It was like United Nations. And in there, I met in the Bridge program, which it was created as a place for BIPOC students and first gen. Because, you know, we don't know nothing about educational systems. So they create outlets for us to be exposed to science, and they see that beautiful brain of yours, right? They see the capacity that you have beyond your eyes. So almost like Dr. Strange that can open that portal and see the future. That's how I think they see the future, right? And they saw future me, the one that you're hearing right now sitting down in front of you. Not in my wildest dreams. I will be a doctor, a professor, and a professional that I am today. So the Bridge program introduced me to my Arthur, to my Robin, to my change in life. That was the Bridge program brought me here to San Diego State, my home. I call it my home because in San Diego State, I was so lost. You are talking in here, we have over 60,000 students, 60K students around. I was a transfer student, an older student, a female, and I didn't know what to do. And then I joined because the Bridge program gives you a mentor and puts you in a room of a lot of people that is like you. From different nations and different majors, but all in science. Mine was neuroscience and psychology. And I met Dr. Martin. She has been what I call my college parent. She had taught me everything that I know about leadership, kindness, and culture, and how to be one in, of the heroes of the Justice League here. So when I met her, I didn't know because, you know, nobody taught me that you cannot call your professors by their first name. Because in my country, we do. We call you by your first name. So I called Dr. Martin by her first name. And then she turned around with a smile. And she said, well, now you owe me a PhD.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm like, what is a PhD?
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know that. The educational systems are so different from my country to here. That I was like, I don't know what a PhD is. And she explained me what it was, and I was like, got it. I will work on it. 14 years later, okay, here I am. She was my first catalyst to prevent me to become a villain.
Because there was these experiences, and I mean, of course, like even just from having to immigrate here, mm-hmm, those, I mean, all of that, we psychologists, we call that trauma. Mm-hmm. And so like all of those could be reasons to go more toward the Joker kind of story. Yeah.
So think I wasn't Harley Quinn because no, I didn't.
Yeah, Harley Quinn.
Right.
Yeah.
She's my fave for multiple reasons.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. But, no, I wasn't the psychiatrist that went in with the bad guys. No, but I did have a lot of anger on me, and I have a lot of injustice in me. I saw it firsthand, and I got to experience it firsthand. So remember that professor that we talked in the beginning?
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? They were here at San Diego State.
No way.
Yeah.
No way.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. So they came back into your story again.
Yes. Villains always come back to your stories.
Villains always come back. Oh, yes. My goodness.
I will say I am more like Magneto when it comes to be a villain.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because, you know, I saw the genocide of in my country, and I came to this other country thinking, hey, you understand what it is to be in war and stuff like that, and you're going to treat me nice. Not better than anybody, but it's just normal. But like Magneto, you know, they mistreat me and my family and everybody else. And I saw how we are lost in the universities sometimes, you know, because they're so big. And it's we're one little thing in the middle of a sea of people. And you came and get so much injustice, so you become like Magneto, that you want to create something to protect your people. And that's what I was trying to do. Mm-hmm. But thank goodness I have my Dr. X, which was Dr. Martin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she taught me, connect me with other mentors. So back then, I used to have 2 full-time jobs. I was chronically ill.
Oh, my goodness.
I was a caregiver for my mother. And I was still trying to finish learning English.
Mm.
Oh, and by the way, I have a disability that is learning disabilities that I'm extremely dyslexic.
Mm.
And then I transfer here. And my first semester didn't went well.
Wait, you didn't get like over a 3.0 your first semester with
no.
all that? No.
No, my first semester didn't even make it to the 2 number.
No.
Yeah.
That's too many things.
Yeah.
You had too many things.
Well, but that's what happened when you are a BIPOC student.
Mm.
You are the first.
Mm.
When you're a first gen, you're the first. So you have to figure out life.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, a lot of us, we are the caregivers of our parents, translators, and everything else. And we are the providers, too, right? Granted, my mom did work, too, but it wasn't enough. Welcome to San Diego.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And one thing that people doesn't remember, that in my time, we didn't have the national care that we have now for health.
Oh, so there's no Obamacare.
No.
Oh, man. So you were really trying to figure it out.
I was literally, I was
and
using.
You had a chronic illness.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I was, thank goodness I recover and stuff. But, well, no, I still have a chronic illness. I have something called POTS, but that one is not as cute as the other one.
Okay.
So I spent a lot of my student loans and my scholarships and my work money in paying for
healthcare.
Medication,
no.
healthcare. It was almost like $9,000
oh
a month.
Oh, my goodness.
Back in the day. You're talking about 14 years ago.
Oh, my goodness.
2010.
Oh, my goodness.
2010. So, yeah, it was not fun that time. That's what I'm saying. I was Magneto then, and then Dr. X grabbed me,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, let's use your, I think, I that's why I identify so much with the Phoenix, you know, in the X-Men. And I love X-Men because that's your origin story for many of you.
Mm-hmm.
You can identify with one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You are
mm-hmm.
the weirdo. Mm-hmm. You are the not looking X, Y, and C.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate the metaphor with Professor X, right? Because,
yeah.
like, people come and there's all these unique talents and gifts
mm-hmm.
that all the students have, right?
Yeah.
And so how do you find that lab, that home base,
yeah.
that space on campus to let your superpower emerge, right?
So mine was Dr. Martin. Mm-hmm. That was the, which is the dean of, assistant dean of the College of Science. Mm-hmm. College of Science. Mm-hmm. You know, again, science, right? Mm-hmm. So I joined, my best friends were in the classes with me because I joined a community. Before that, I will come to school, go to work, go home, and repeat.
That's a commuter student. Yeah. That's what they do.
Yep.
They come here. They go home, they go to work.
And that's it.
That's it.
Yeah, no clubs, no nothing.
Yeah.
And then in one of my classes, and because Dr. Martin, I was taking this class that was like how to adapt to school here, mm-hmm. that Dr. Martin will teach. And then I learned about Black Student Science Association.
Hmm. What's that?
And that is a club because here in San Diego State, we have 315 clubs. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't know that because, like I said, I go home, work, repeat, mm-hmm. class, right? Mm-hmm. And for all my commuters now, we didn't have the center of commuters that you guys have here. Mm-hmm. That didn't exist in my time. So lucky you. There was times that because I take public transportation, because remember, I have a disability and I have dyslexia and whatnot, so I didn't drive. So I will take the trolley, my limo. I call it my red limo.
Oh, my red limo. Whoa, as a psychologist now, I know you weren't at the time as you're telling this story, but that's a positive reframe. Mm-hmm. My red limo. That's really good.
Dr. Martin is the one that taught me that. Because I used to hate it.
Yeah.
But she told me about in Marine and the MARC program helped me with audiobooks and stuff like that to work in the trolley. Meanwhile, I was coming to school. Mm. So I did a lot of my studying in there. Because remember, my first semester, I flunked every class.
Oh, my goodness.
And I got into academic probation.
Yeah, no, it's not easy to start off that way.
No.
Yeah.
And then that name, that saying, you are going to flip hamburgers forever.
Mm-hmm.
Imposter syndrome came heavy. Mm-hmm.
Now, what is imposter syndrome? What's that?
I don't know. What do you think is imposter syndrome?
You're the psychologist.
You're a psychologist.
We're both psychologists. So I have a different take on imposter syndrome. So I think of it as like you're transitioning. And often I see it with like high performing students. Mm-hmm. So I get these IB students, International Baccalaureate. And next thing you know, they got how'd you get imposter syndrome? Right. But you're so used to like achieving, excelling, mm-hmm. and then to go into a new system and have to start all over mm-hmm. and be the new person mm-hmm. and not know where everything is.
Right.
Can I do this? Can I do this? Right. And so really for me, I think it's reminding students that you've had other successes in your life. How do we help you find your place on campus and really get you there?
Well, for me, mm-hmm. it's B1C1.
Ooh.
I was always the first one in any room.
Mm-hmm.
I laugh because if my classmates, which now they're doctors, mathematicians, professors. I have one, my BFF, that she is an MD, PhD, which is 0.1 in the population. We never saw one of us in power, mm-hmm. in a leadership position.
Mm-hmm.
Other than Dr. Martin, there was not that many people of color that had a big position. Mm-hmm. My professors, they were all Caucasian. Mm-hmm. And remember, my nemesis, evil one, mm-hmm. was still there. Mm-hmm. And like me, was a mestiza, like half-half, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, imposter syndrome is not giving the opportunity to somebody to be a leader mm-hmm. because you have a specific color. What specific gender? Mm-hmm. What specific mm-hmm. something?
Mm-hmm.
Imposter syndrome is what Magneto had. Because mm-hmm. Magneto and Dr. X both are overachiever, excellent people. But one got to be around people that love and care.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one got killed all his family.
Mm-hmm.
They got take away everything and nothing was given. Not even a hope. So mm-hmm. he had to create hope. So for me, I mean, imposter syndrome didn't go away until even now. I still have it. Like you get from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one thing that music taught me and the comic books and video games is resiliency.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody always asks me, you know, They're like, how did you survive all that? How did you graduate? How you are who you are right now? Because during my education time, as my BA and whatnot, thanks to BSSO, opened doors for other opportunities here at San Diego State. They taught me about the Love Library, which, by the way, sometimes I had to spend 24 hours, a.k.a. When I couldn't go back home because I was a commuter, I would stay in the library and then go take a shower in the gym and continue my day, you know? Mm-hmm. I was placed in something called the Bounce Back Program when I got in academic probation. Mm-hmm. And I think you said you taught in that one once, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I taught in Bounce Back, yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite classes to teach.
Yeah, because they teach you about resiliency and self-care and love for your education and you, right? So because I was in the Bounce Back program my first year of academic probation, I got into the BSSO, I got into Active Minds, which is a club here in San Diego that state that teach you about mental health and community and all the beautiful things. So I changed. That was the catalyst for me to change from education to major science, which was the neuroscience and psychology. Mm. And because the Bridge program where I met Dr. Martin taught me about wet labs. Mm. I wanted to do research. I was so obsessed with mirror neurons back in the day, which it makes sense now because, you know, B1, C1. So I went on my own human mirror neuron. Mm. And I was like mystique, if you think. I just wanted to belong so badly because I was rejected so many times in education here because, like, again, I was older and stuff. But BSSO was my saving heaven. It was my ex-academy, my mutant academy. And some people will ask me, well, why you didn't join Mecha? Because, you know, I'm Latina, right? And to that I said, because I have a big T of, like, you know, internal war in my country. And Mecha was, like, very outspoken like that. So I was like, I can't do this. So I feel like if I were to stay there, I would have become Magneto. Nothing about bad about them or anything. They are amazing. Yeah. But, you know, you have to know when you need something more gentle.
Hmm. So it sounds like you're really able to kind of reflect on your story. And I'm sure you're consulting with mentors and all the different things. And you're able to find your pathway.
Yeah.
And that's what I call, like, kind of shrinking down the campus and finding your people. Mm-hmm. And so you found people. And so cultural identity is one way to find your people. But then you can also connect on science. You can connect on extracurricular stuff. But it's really finding a community that allows you to feel a sense of home, a sense of connection.
Because, you know, part of being in the imposter syndrome is that you lose your identity. You know, you lose your identity because you were the A student. You were the best in the family, whatever, right? Which I was. I think the other reason also that I have the width and grit I have is because I grew up with brothers and I'm the baby of the family too.
That makes sense.
And the only girl. Mm. So I was never taught no. Mm. I was always taught, you can do it, until I came here, right? And I said that because if you are the first in your family that's coming to university, just know that it's going to be hard but not impossible at all. In the sense of, like, you need to find your village, your community that will build everything. Mm-hmm. And there is a specific classes, like the class I took with Dr. Martin that was about teaching you how to survive school here, the Bounce Back Program class, the Bridges Program class. All those classes helped me to plug to the things that I didn't know existed, to the point that I stopped working full time because I started working full time in the university. Mm. I work in the College of Science Dean's office for no places. Mm. I was like, remember the professor? Again, he came back. And I'm like, what are you doing here? We're like, no, I'm the secretary. And, like, the funny thing about that is, like, I'm the secretary with dyslexia.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they give me the tools I needed to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
So I graduate. But I didn't graduate with good GPA because, you know, my first year was like not the stellar one. And that's what I always teach my students, that protect your first 2 years of college, because that will give you a buffer if life is going to life, right?
Life lives.
Yeah. And I graduated and then I started applying to, I was like, that's it. I graduate. I'm done. I did my duty. But I remember what Dr. Martin told me.
You owe her a PhD.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then she was like, so I thought like, oh, my BS. And I'm like, she was like, nope, where is your PhD? And I was like, what do you mean? And I was like, I cannot afford it. You know, all the things that we told ourselves because we're first gen and we are BIPOC. I was like, no, I can't do any of this. And then she was, oh, let's apply to this. Scholarships, let's apply for these programs. She said, let's just apply and see how the process is. How is that going to hurt you, right? And like again, my village helped me. And through that village, I met one of the professors, aka director of the Homeland Security Program. We spent hours talking in the dean's office about research in Guatemala and about how to do social change and humanities, you know, all the things I'm passionate about. And we nerd out. Oh, my gosh. He used to talk so much about rocks because he was a, what do you call it?
Geologist?
Yes.
Okay.
He is a geologist that is the director of the Homeland Security Program.
Fascinating.
Yeah, because I was like, wait, you study rocks? And like, what? And you do Homeland Security? What? Mm-hmm. So he taught me everything about security, which is almost like a video game. You know, like you have to infiltrate, you have to do these things and top secret.
Listen, we're not going to be teaching people how to infiltrate on this podcast. We're not going to get in trouble, right?
No, we're not. Okay. But yes, we are.
We are.
Going to teach them how to infiltrate because you have to be one to be one.
Okay.
Right,
yeah, I'm with you.
In the sense of like infiltration comes with you be the first one in that room. That's the infiltration. You will not be like Mystique trying to fit in. You will be your proudest blue self. What do I mean with that? The Homeland Security Program, I want you to understand that back in the day, it was top three in the nation. Top three. Remember my GPA? Wasn't the best. And I have great recommendation letters, though. And I have a good personal statement. And I have an idea of a project that I wanted to do, that it was creating a training program utilizing video games like the zombie apocalypse. Because a pandemic may happen, what we will do.
So you were like ahead of your time here.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were like, COVID, see, I told you guys.
I know, like, it will happen. So... I applied to that one in other Ivy schools, and I got placed in waiting list for some of them. And then for Homeland Security, I got in. I did the interview and, you know, my cuckoo pops ideas, as I call it. They were fascinated because in that program, you have people that was active duty first responders, obviously, agents from the three letter things, you know. Yeah. And then you have the two weirdos that they were like psychology and dentistry.
Interesting.
And when I entered there, I'm a very social person because I learned to being social gives you a network, because network is your worth. Things that I learned with Dr. Martin and the BSSO. So I went to the program and we create the toolbox of connection for Guatemala and sustainability. So it was a, technically speaking, it was a project where you connect Guatemala beauty and everything to United States to learn about sustainability. And then because of the program, I was still in BSSO. I was part of the PR because, you know, I like to socialize. And I was always like, oh, let's make it like comics. So I was part of the PR. And from Homeland Security and the College of Science, they recommend me to apply to be in the, what I call it, the homecoming queen, which is not popular. It's not like high school, because I was like, ew, no, I don't want to do that. That sounds like complicated. No, thank you. And then they explained me, no, you have to be an elite student, meaning you have to have this specific GPA. You have to be involved in school groups and in school things and why not? Because at this point, I was recovered from a lot of things. And one of those things, I never saw young adults with cancer that they have their own club or they have anything. AKA, we don't have insurance. So I create the first club in here at San Diego State that was called Stupid Cancer. Mm. And the nationwide club that I used to go as an attendee, it was for young adults. It was called the F Beep Cancer.
So I'll have to get a soundboard.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Okay. Yeah, that's it. You know?
Yeah.
So I create that one here at San Diego State. And guess what?
Mm.
You create it and they will come, like the movie.
Mm-hmm.
There was so many students that they were young adults with cancer coming to San Diego State as a students.
Mm.
And many of them, I see myself reflected in like, oh, you're coming high to class. No, I'm in chemo or like you this and that, you know? So because of that, we applied to be the homecoming queen. And I was so excited because, you know, it was almost like having a prom, which in my country, we don't do that. So it was brand new to me. Mm. So you get to get dressed up. We come in a limo. You get three babies.
It wasn't the red limo, was it?
No, the red limo. It was a real black limo. Like, I was like, ooh, I feel fancy.
Yeah.
Which for a lot of us, it was the first time that we were treated so nice in the school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was just so delighted to be in there and meeting such a powerful people and very mixed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then they announced the winners of 2004.
See, this will be my drum roll right now. I'm looking for the button to push. Yeah.
So they announced the winners, and not even in my wildest dreams.
Mm.
Talking about imposter syndrome again, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not in my wildest dreams. I will thought that I will won that such an honor. You're talking about 60,000 students, 30,000 females. They choose me to be their queen. And I say I'm the last queen because I didn't thought that it was very inclusive being queen and king.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're called royals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I was in 2014.
Homecoming royals.
Yeah.
And that's 2014, you were going to say?
Yeah, 2014 is when they changed the name.
Wow.
Yeah, but my king and I, we create this program called the Kaleidoscope of Abilities that was alive for 9 months. No, sorry, 9 years, not 9 months, 9 years. And it was a collective of people with disabilities and abilities, kind of like your ex-academy in your Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
We come all together to show the world that we can become leaders. We can become examples of elite education. And because of that, too, at the same time, because, you know, why not do everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
So at the same time, I applied to, well, I was nominated to be one of the people for the Quest of the Best, which is the vice president award in the school, which is only 10 people that gets it in the whole school.
Mm.
And I was one of the few in many, 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 many years in San Diego State that got the presidential award and the vice presidential award in the same year.
Mm.
And that was, you know, I say this not to brag. It sounds bragging, but it's not.
Mm.
What it is I didn't have nothing.
Mm.
Nothing at all. In the sense of, like, I wasn't that special. I wasn't the top A student, as you call it.
Mm-hmm.
I was thought I was not okay. I was thought that I was somehow broken somewhere,
mm-hmm.
that I was disabled to not be able to do things.
Mm-hmm.
And again, remember that the evil story,
mm-hmm.
the villain of the story. So they were in both of the events. Light of life, man. Life.
Oh my goodness.
Life is gonna life.
Yeah.
But instead of being bitter about it, instead of like, you know, I almost dropped out of school because of you kind of thing, I went and showed them like, hey, I graduated, I did this, blah, blah, blah. Thank you for inspiring me in a different way, you know? And since then, they always claim me as one of like their, what do you call it, the jewels that they discover. Mm. Which, go with, like, don't go with it. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Why do I say this? Because sometimes we have to forgive the people that didn't believe in us. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sometimes as BIPOC and first gen, it's not that they don't want us here. It's just they didn't know that we existed. Mm. Right? Mm. So I graduated from my Homeland Security program with honors and all the medals and all the stuff. It was so much fun. Mm. And I even my little tassel have a little crown because they give me that as a in the homecoming. Mm-hmm. And then it was time to apply for my PhD because you remember I owe that to my mentor, mm-hmm. To my Alfred. And I had to make a decision because I got accepted to study outside of the United States. I was going to go to France to study diplomacy, mm-hmm. not psychology, mm-hmm. diplomacy. Mm-hmm. And then life is gonna life. Mm. And it happened again, right? So I have to make the choice to pick a program. I got accepted in Ivy schools. Mm. And I went and toured them and all that. But one thing that I learned is, like, if you cannot find your community, you're not gonna survive in that environment. Mm. You have to find at least one person. So I went to a different route. I didn't went to, like, your traditional route. I got a PsyD, which mm-hmm. is a doctoral, too, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. which is still I get to be called doctor.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You have to do a research project and yes. a dissertation and all
yes.
this stuff.
Yep. Yes. And but the beauty of this one is that very hands-on. Mm. So I went and did forensics. So I was in the high-security jail, prisons, and juvie. Mm. And guess what was a lot of people in there?
Who was in there?
Dyslexic, disabled, learning disabilities, BIPOC people. Mm. And I will tell them, like, oh, no, you can totally go to university. Like, blah, 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 you know? Mm. If I did it, you can do it, mm. you know? Because technically speaking, I didn't have nothing. Mm. I came for nothing. Mm. And a lot of them, you know, some people will say, well, they're billions. No. They didn't got the opportunities I got. They mm-hmm. didn't got the mentorship that I got. And because I did all that hands-on, I also saw the ones that they suffered the most trauma, mm-hmm. which was our active duty and first responders mm-hmm. and law enforcement. And so I was like, what if I teach the law enforcement about special needs and BIPOC people mm-hmm. and why it's so important that we have spaces where we can feel safe. But I teach them through comics, through movies like Black Panther, The Punisher. And, you know, I speak their language that way because, remember, I learned it in Homeland Security. And everything started matching. You know, my neuroscience background, which helped me to understand a lot of the brain activity and video games. And then all my educational part of arts and music with every video game, if you didn't know, it has a special kind of sound and music that gives you an ambient. Mm. Like, who doesn't know the Mortal Kombat music? Or my favorite, Finish Him. You know, everybody.
Fatality.
Yeah, everybody remembers that.
Yes, 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 yes.
So if you have music in the background when you're studying, like, for example, Mario Bros., or like Mortal Kombat, you can finish your homework faster. 50% faster.
Come on now.
Yeah.
That's not, no.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to get like some, you know, I'm going to get in trouble with copyright, but we got to put the music on the thing so they can download it real easy for the students.
And that's what I was like, wait, they don't teach you this in class? Yeah. How to better self-care and how to better get an A in your tests and stuff, because if you just hum the, you know, before your test, mm-hmm. you're going to remember everything that you memorize. Mm. If I also teach how to do cheat sheets per se, mm-hmm. but almost like video games, like they start writing summaries of each one of the chapters and then we make it like a game.
Okay.
Gamification. They call it cheat sheets because it's, you have to summarize. Like,
I don't want to get in trouble with these cheat sheets now.
Well, they call it cheat sheets, but you don't bring them to your test.
Okay.
You use it to study. But my students, I always told them, just do one and bring it to the test in my class. And they bring it to the test and they never use it.
Fascinating.
Because by the time that you're going to take the test, and we did so many games and stuff like that with the cheat sheets.
You got it in your memory.
Yeah. Also, I taught them that with smells and music, you can re-trigger and bring memories of trauma. But I was like, why? What happened if I do it in something positive? Like, who doesn't remember the smell of cookies? Christmas smell, because everybody has a different smell for Christmas. For some is pines, for some is wood, for me it's tamales, you know, like everybody has a different smell. So you can memorize and recall memory with smells and sound. So I teach you in classes how to recall better things for your education, because, you know, being in a science major is really hard to memorize things. And you have to memorize a lot of things. And being dyslexic, I have to come up with different things to learn things and be able to score the numbers that I needed for my classes. And also, when you read manga, you read from left to right, which it challenges your brain to neuroplasticity, right? Mm-hmm. So in a lot of classes, what I teach my students, I teach them, okay, you're going to read a manga before we do this. And they look at me like, what? Because that will activate a different part of your brain. Yeah. That way, when we teach, they are more activating your brain. All your brain is engaged, per se. We put music like Zelda or Final Fantasy, which is very relaxing and calms your nervous system. And in my clinical work, I specialize in bottom-up techniques, which means regular therapy, Western therapy, is thoughts, feelings, and body, right? That's the mega of it. CBT, DBT is thoughts, like feelings, and body, right? Bottom-up is body, feelings, and calming your mind, which, as a Mayan person, we have a lot of folklore. We have a lot of traditions that we do sound baths, moon baths, crystals, smudging. We do all that in my culture, but it has been westernized here. So I do something that is, I have my own podcast. So this is the announcement that is called Oasis Community Podcast, where I teach about mental health, but I also teach about holistic health because, you know, our roots teach you that. In Homeland Security and with Dr. Martin, I was able to travel to Guatemala. They have study abroad to Ghana, to different places where you learn so much about herbs, about crystals, about traditions that will help you to do better in school. And also, you get to find comics that talk about all those things in different countries. So I become fascinated about comics, and because comics and video games are a representation historically of what is happening in the moment, in the time. So my dissertation was, the benefits of video games in mental health and therapeutic techniques for military and first responders. So I have the big dudes come into my office and we play Tetris and we do Mortal Kombat, Halo, Call of Duty. And I know what you're going to say. Games, addiction, what about that? It's not true that games give you... I mean, yes, you can be addicted to them, but you can be addicted to bubble gum. You can be addicted to anything.
Pink bubble gum.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. It's not about the medium. It's about the addiction itself is it's an illness, right? That you're trying to numb something or feel something. AKA, you know, pretty much everybody that was in jail when I was working in there, they have some kind of addiction. I was lucky, and I say it clearly, I was lucky that I'm allergic to almost everything these days. that with all the things, all the big T's and little T's that I went through, I didn't become addicted to anything. because it was expected of me. So many times when I was sick, you know, because I get dizzy and stuff like that. And sometimes I'm like a possum because I have something called possum. Sometimes I pass out like a possum. People will say, oh, are you using or something? I'm like, really? Just because I'm brown, you think that's what is happening to me? But I said that to many of my students because it is really easy to go to that slippery slope. You know, because community is everything. Community can build you or destroy you. And a lot of the times we leave our communities and don't come back to help them.
Kind of like something you said earlier, like these different narratives, these different universes that all folks can exist in. So it sounded like you could, any person could go anyway based on the experiences and the traumas. But having like the support group, the mentor, that takes you more on the hero trajectory versus the villain trajectory. Yeah. And so just doing some of that extra stuff, like getting social support, asking for help can really change your life is what I hear you saying.
Yeah. But being, for example, in your case, you're a male, right? Mm-hmm. You are a male of color. I'm assuming first gen. You don't know how to ask for help.
That's what, we're not supposed to ask for help. That's, somehow that's...
bad.
Yeah, for your masculinity now. You get socialized to be a tough guy. There's this documentary called Tough Guys, and it's the whole idea that you put on the front or you put on that facade as a man to survive, right, out in society. But then you get into a system like the university, and there's all this, you know, money and resources being spent to provide help because college is hard and it's challenging and you need help. And so it kind of forces you to consider, you know, typical early male socialization, but then like now you're in this system and how do you navigate it? And so just listening to your story of being a first gen student, and it sounds like you really figured out how to navigate this system.
Well, yeah, I got a map. And the map was provided by my mentors. It was provided by the people that came before me, right? Your ancestors. Believe it or not, to all the students that are listening, I'm your ancestor. I'm the dinosaur right now. But I'm the one that paid the price for a lot of the things that we have. Like, for example, I don't know if you guys knew, but we have a comics certification that I wish we had back in the day when I was in college. We have a gaming section in the library, which... I say this because I would have loved to play video games all night when I have to spend the night here because we didn't have no more transportation because it stops at 10. And the reason why I say this is because in my classes I teach, you know, success and happiness. What is success and happiness? It depends for the person. Sometimes success, it may be the CEO position, and sometimes success, it means hashtag van life. You know, sometimes success means I need a quiet place to be. And sometimes success means I just want to be the dancer that is out there dancing. And I'm able to teach you that in a very mischievous way. By a comic book, by a movie, by a game. Because all that has a lot of psychology and self-care. And as people, it's gonna people, right? If I bring you somebody, you're like, but that's that person. That's not me. But if I bring you a superhero, oh, you will leave everything in there because everybody has an origin story and a redemption story. And that's what I teach in classes. You know what makes a leader? The follower. So when you go first, think about a dance floor in a college campus. It's empty, right? Everybody's just bobbing their heads and nobody comes to the dance floor. And it takes one person to go to that dance floor. And everyone like look at them like, okay. But then it's the second person, the follower, that gives authorization to the leader to be the leader. So the second person is the most important. So leadership doesn't have to be always the shiny look at me one. Sometimes leadership is quiet. It's like, I support you. I'm going to be your psychic. Because that makes you shine. Because you are the one that has the power to turn wheels. And then I will follow. And when you are tired and you cannot do it anymore, then I can. And then it comes the third and the fourth, and then you bring a community, mm-hmm. which is what I create outside of school. You know, I create my own podcast and whatnot, but also I teach coaches how to be trauma-informed, and I teach practitioners how to be holistic-informed, and I teach both how to self-care. And I learn all that through my schooling, and I bring it to my classes. Mm-hmm. Because one thing that I noticed that we didn't teach our students, and we still don't, is self-care and mental wellness.
So, is that something that you'll teach students for your upcoming course? You should be, teaching Mastering the Game, Building Power, Leadership, and Success. You'll be teaching that this spring.
Yes.
So, So what will the students learn in that course?
They will learn techniques of how to talk to people, how to socialize with people, because believe it or not, COVID babies, we don't know how. How to socialize in technology, without technology, how to create the blueprint for your success and what success means. And what is your identity? Because your identity is not what it was placed on you. You need to find your own identity. And that's something that we don't learn yet in colleges. Mm-hmm. I teach you the little techniques of how to work smarter, not harder, about the smells, about video games, about mindfulness. Mm-hmm. And I also teach you how to love you. Because a lot of the times we have learned through our communities to not like us, to not like how we look, to not like the quirky things that our culture does. And I teach you to belong in the place that doesn't look like you do.
Yeah, even as you're saying that, and I'm thinking about like comic books and video games and heroes, and they typically, from my, you know, this is your expertise now, but there's something unique about them. And sometimes we want to be like everybody else, but I think even from this work, it really highlights that there's something unique about each character that gives them their power. And so what is it like for students to be able to sit with their own superpowers, those things that make them unique, their big T traumas, small T traumas, right? But really identity, right? And so like in my work, I think about identity, meaning, and purpose, right? Yeah. So who are you? Who are you becoming? Right. Who do you want to be, right? And so as I'm listening to your story, I see identity, meaning, and purpose, right? You got a sense of who you are as a person on the planet.
Right.
And that really oriented you on a path towards meaning and purpose. And you really live that out in your story.
Yeah. And the meaning and purpose, you know, back in the day, you can say my meaning and purpose back in the day was like, oh, I want to be a musician and I want to go to the conservatory in France. That didn't happen. And then my purpose in life was like, okay, I'm going to be a teacher and teach the next generation. That didn't happen. Well, kind of happened, but not really how I planned it. You know, I'm not in elementary school or high school. And then I was like, I'm going to be a diplomat or a FBI agent. That didn't happen. It happened in a different way, but that is a story for a different podcast. And then it was like, I'm going to be what? Question mark. Right? Imposter syndrome again. If I didn't have my mentors here at school, the classes that helped me how to navigate school, like the blueprint, I wouldn't survive it. And now I can tell you all the big T's, little T's helped me to navigate everything that I do now. Because now I use music. I use, if you will, my woo-woo things from back home, the Mayan things. I use holistic healing. I use my clinical, high-end clinical science to heal. I use my geeky self in everything that I do, as you have heard. Hello. I use geek culture and nerdy therapy with first responders, active duty, and chronically ill, which is the people that was in my life that either they hurt me or helped me. But now I get to make a print for them to be able to heal. That way they don't hurt others. And then I become a professor here. And I am so excited because it is like a whole full circle. And remember the villain? the villain's still here. Mm. But now it became my alley. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because sometimes we do better when we know better. Mm-hmm, and some people doesn't know better because we haven't exposed them to better. Because you are the better. And that's what I teach you in the classes. I teach you that not to be cocky, but to be proud, loud, and kind to everything and everybody that you meet.
What's a lesson that you take from an elder in your community or culture that you still carry with you today?
I will use my college parents, meaning Dr. Martin. Mm-hmm. The biggest lesson that I learned is your biggest cheerleader doesn't have to look like you. Mm. Doesn't have to think like you. Mm. But if you have at least one person that believes in you, hardcore believes in you, you can accomplish anything and everything.
So it sounds like, because I'm, you know, this is the home base podcast. Yeah. And so it really sounds like Dr. Martin was a home base for you.
Yeah.
And BSSO as well. So you really found your place. Mm-hmm. And typically these home bases, they allow us to feel a sense of security so that when things come up, I know somebody in my network, somebody in my home base is going to be able to help me figure out how to do this. And then I feel safe and secure. Then I can go explore more stuff. This is attachment theory, right?
Right.
Like, you just make sense to you, psychologist. but I think like it's a practical and applied way of understanding attachment, especially with college students, right? Because some folks come here, they come and they move in with their boxes, like in the movies,
right?
And then the parents are dropping them off,
right?
And that's great, yay for them. But for the commuter students on the red limo, as it's called, you might need something different,
right?
And it's finding that mentor, it's finding that research lab, it's finding that identity center, it's finding that club, but it's finding that place on campus where it's your people. Broadly defined, and you're getting a sense, like it's almost like a place where your superpowers are celebrated and admired.
But also your mix. What do I mean? One thing that I learned from the Sistema, the Philharmonic from Venezuela and Guatemala, it was that they have this amazing thing that they will have people with different social economic status and different races. That way we learn from each other. That way you make social change. Because if you're only in your little cloud, like a commuter, like you say, I was in my commuter life. If I would have only joined the Latino stuff, I would have not learned the beauty of like Ghana or Africa and I wouldn't Wakanda Forever kind of thing, you know? I wouldn't not be able to talk in comics and different shows about this kind of stuff because you need to expose yourself to different communities to be safe and to create safe environments.
And I think that's the magic of being on a college campus, right? Like you get people from all over the world, all different backgrounds that are coming together, you know, and if the space is created, you really get a chance to experience the richness of different people's identities and life stories and origin stories, right?
Yeah. And in all my classes, I always teach, we all have the capacity to be a villain or a hero. Which one do you choose?
Well, listen, on that note, thank you so much for sitting down with us. Before I let you get out of here, what is one piece of advice that you would give to our young adult listeners who are aspiring to leadership roles but may feel held back for some reason? It could be imposter syndrome. It could be cultural expectations. But you've really lived a dynamic life despite some of the big T's and small T's. So what advice would you give for young people that want to aspire to kind of go in your direction?
Have fun. Learn how to play. There's the saying, and it's skipping my mind right now, but there is this great psychologist that is the original of play therapy that says when we stop playing, depression and dying comes.
Ooh.
Meaning, I learned how to play in my clubs. I learned how to play in the classes that they were giving me no expectation other, like, just learn, just play, just play. And that's what I do in my classes. And I encourage anybody that is listening to please join a class that I call it the Patito classes. Because you know the little rubber duckies? In Spanish, it's called patito. So the little rubber duckies are cute, are amazing, but they will survive a storm. They will float. Mm. And the reason why I bring that up is because if I didn't have the bounce back program, if I didn't have the immersion to college program or the bridge program, or when I was in Homeland Security, aka my grad school, if I didn't have my internship program that was a class, that it was just to play, you know? It was credit, no credit class, so you don't have the pressure like, oh my God, I'm gonna kill my GPA, mm-hmm. but it helps my GPA. Mm-hmm. And also the professors teach you skills that are transferable for the outside world. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love what you do and the classes that we teach and also the programs that we belong to, because they're programs where you get to still play.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, thank you so much for all of your knowledge, wisdom, and really being transparent and sharing your experiences. This is another episode of the Homebase Podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
The Homebase Podcast is a student success podcast recorded at the Digital Humanities Center at San Diego State University Library. Like, follow, subscribe. Find us on IG at SDSU_Homebase.